I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a new book that I've just started, Wearing the Green Beret, a Canadian with the Royal Marine Commandos. It's a frank account of Jake Olofsson's decision to join the military, his training, and his service in Afghanistan. It's a fine view into service, sacrifice in the military, how this war is being conducted, patriotism, life, and death. Jake Olofsson joins me now. He helped fight forest fires here in BC in 2003 as a member of the Canadian Army Reserve, and for 4 years he was a Royal Marine Commando, serving two tours in Afghanistan. He left the Corps in 2009 and returned home to Vancouver Island, where he's in the international marine security industry. The book is published by McClelland & Stewart. Please welcome to the Planta Online program Jake Olofsson. Good morning, Mr. Olofsson.
Good morning.
First, thank you for your service. I'll ask you whether you think people at home, people here, do enough to recognize the service of fighting men and women such as yourself. Do they?
I think in Canada, over the last couple of years, you know, since our commitment in Afghanistan has really taken hold, I think that the difference in Canada is huge over the last few years. I think that the recognition and the credit that Canada's servicemen and women are getting is the way it should be. You know, 10 years ago it was different, but today I think that the recognition is there.
Yeah, and the adjustment coming home for you, was that easy?
For me, it was a smooth transition. One of the biggest things for me when I got home was just, I constantly find myself wondering why I'm not on an airplane again, heading off overseas or flying somewhere else, and now I'm not going to the airport all the time. But other than that, I found it was a smooth transition. Sadly, that's not necessarily the case with a lot of people, but everything was fine for me.
Yeah, what should we do, though, for those men and women who come back and it's not as smooth? Is there something that we should do more of, perhaps?
Well, I think a lot of the support that individuals have, like with post-traumatic stress disorder and things like that, PTSD, I think a lot of the support is there for them. I just don't know if people are taking advantage of the support that's already been put in place through Veteran Affairs and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff out there that people maybe aren't aware of, and maybe part of the problem is just they're not made aware of all the support that is actually out there.
Yeah. Let's go into your background here. Where were you born?
I was born in Comox on Vancouver Island.
Yeah, and when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, like any kid, that changed all the time.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a pilot, a doctor, you name it. But I was always interested in the military as a child, and I grew up near the Air Force Base in Comox, so I'd constantly see planes taking off and landing, and wanted to be a pilot. But in the end, I really enjoyed being out in the woods when I grew up, a lot of camping, a lot of fishing, that kind of stuff. So it made sense that I keep boots on my feet rather than go for a pilot.
You're only a couple of years older than I am. And what I've noticed in starting the book is sort of this, what interested me was this background of yours, that people of our generation aren't necessarily, until 2001, we were kept away from war. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We're not. War is not something, say, that American kids our age would have had experience with, or generations before had experience with. So I'm wondering what brought you there, or what interested you in military service?
Well, my family's had a history of serving in uniform in Canada, right up to my great-grandfather, my grandfather served in World War II, his brother, my father served in uniform, so there is a tradition in the family.
And there's a story in the book where your dad took you to see your high school counselor to talk about career choices?
Yes, there is, yeah.
And the counselor said what?
Well, the counselor, he was not very supportive of pursuing a career in the military, and I was quite shocked at the time, and my father was very, very shocked, but the counselor, he really tried to dissuade anybody from joining the military. I thought that was quite wrong. If somebody wanted to to chase something in the military. I thought they should just show the support, definitely, for the individual and for the country as a whole.
Yeah. I guess the military isn't for everyone, right? Or is
no,
it?
No, I don't think it's... The military is certainly not for everyone, and that's why our military is a voluntary force, right?
And do you think that works as a voluntary force?
I do. Yeah, I think I think it works better than drafting people because, like in Afghanistan, for example, and with the Canadian soldiers, every single one of them is a volunteer. They're there because they want to be there. They're doing the job because they want to do the job, and at the end of the day, that makes for more effective soldiers.
And I'm sure because of the book, you'll be talking to young people about your service. And they may be wondering whether the military is right for them. What, in your mind, do you think qualifies one to serve?
Dedication. That's the most important one.
Yeah,
dedication.
Is that something you learn, or is that something that that you already have?
A bit of both. Yeah, you're going to be born with it, definitely, but that's something that can be taught into you, you know, to a ridiculous degree. That's where the training comes in.
So after high school, you were in the Canadian Reserve, and you helped fight the forest fires, I guess, in 03.
Yes.
Here in British Columbia. What happened here? How did you end up with the British? You ended up with the Royal Marines, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Well, I wasn't satisfied with the Canadian Army Reserve. I wanted more. I wanted to do it full-time. I found out that I was pretty good at soldiering, and I really enjoyed it. So I wanted to join full-time. So I debated, of course, just joining the Canadian Army full-time. But the Canadian Army is spread out so far over Canada, that would have pulled me away from home very, very far. Anyways, the closest I could have been is Edmonton. So I just thought, you know, why not join an elite unit, turn it up a notch, and get to go live in Europe at the same time. The Royal Marines do a lot more traveling, both operationally and on training exercises, than the Canadian Army would usually do. So you get to see a lot more of the world by seeing it with the Royal Marines.
And I'm not familiar with the training aspect of it, obviously. The training involves what? My understanding is that the Royal Marines have the longest and the toughest basic training. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And what I mean, as it's in my book, a lot of a good portion of the beginning of the book is dedicated to the training because it is so intense. It's the physical side and the mental determination side that you have to successfully get through Royal Marine Commando training. It's immense. On the physical side, when you finish training, like, you are just so fit. You're like an Olympic athlete, pretty much, and there's hundreds of you there. It's quite an experience.
And so what's involved in sort of the physical training?
Oh, well, you start small. You start with just lots of runs and lots of time in the gym, you know, good old-fashioned push-ups and sit-ups. But as you progress, you start to carry more and more weight everywhere you go until, as you get to the end, the culmination of all your physical training is called the commando tests. There's four of those. You're carrying upwards of 50 pounds, and you'll do, you know, 30 miles. You'll do 30-mile runs over very steep terrain with 50 pounds, and you'll do that start to finish, 7 hours. I mean, that's one of the commando tests. It's not easy.
And in many... reach the breaking point, right? Did you?
No, I didn't, but many do. The failure rate, I mean, after there's a selection process to start Royal Marine Commando training, which is quite intense. That's about a 4-day package. But amongst Royal Marine recruits themselves, the failure rate is up around 50%.
Wow.
And that's through people that just don't display the determination to serve with the Royal Marine Commandos, and that also includes a lot of people that just simply break.
And
physically, I mean.
Yeah, and mentally, what's the process like? I mean, I would think that mentally it's just as important as the physical, or is it?
The mental is as important, if not more important. What they're really looking for, they've got, at the end of the day, they're trying to get people that have the four commando qualities, they call them. And in the book, you'll find that if you don't have those four commando qualities, you'll never be successful in training. And those are courage, determination, unselfishness, and cheerfulness in the face of adversity. And I think the last one, cheerfulness in the face of adversity, is probably the most important one, because it's amazing how your morale can soar when, no matter how tired you are, no matter how beat up you are, if you can look at your buddy and have a smile and make a stupid joke about how funny it is that he's got snot streaming down his face, well, you're well on your way to having the morale to get through it all.
And those four things you talked about, courage, determination, unselfishness, cheerfulness, yeah, amidst adversity, I mean, those are lessons that are universal, that people reading the book can possibly apply to their lives. How do we do that?
Well, the best way is, I suppose, just day to day. You just got to take everything in stride. You got to do it with a smile on your face and be determined to finish what you start.
Yeah, and I guess, that's something that we're seeing a lot of, you know, not just with the economy and the sort, but just life in general, I suppose, in these times.
Absolutely. I mean, you just have to remember that things can always be worse. When we used to do, when we were in groups, like even when I was in Afghanistan, there's some parts mentioned in my book where we'd get off a helicopter and we'd be carrying just ridiculous amounts of weight. I had like 200 pounds on me one time, and I had to go about a kilometer. And I'm a pretty small guy. I was like 150 pounds. 200 pounds on me, that's a lot of weight. And as much as I was hurting, I knew that I was not alone. I know that there was other guys around me that were hurting just as bad. And just knowing that you're not alone helps push you along, right?
And in at home, in this country and in England and the other countries where countries have their troops in Afghanistan or in harm's way, there's great debate politically about the war, about the mission. Do you folks that are there, that are fighting, do you get a sense of the internal debate that's going on at home?
We're constantly, when we're overseas, we follow the news, and we know that the debate rages on whether we should be there or not, without a doubt. But when you're actually over there doing the job, you try to just focus on doing the job, right? I mean, at that point, you have your main goal. You've got two goals. One is to accomplish your missions as they come down day to day, and your other goal is to come home in one piece. And, you know, the debate can rage all at once back home, but when you're overseas, you know, you'll find in my book, you're really focused on just doing the job.
And do you think at all while you're there why you're there?
Not as much as you would probably suspect. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, in the evenings, you might sit around and chat about why you're there, but at the end of the day, you're really just focusing on doing the job and making sure you come back safe.
How much time did you spend in Helmand Province?
I was in the volatile Helmand Province for close to 14 months.
Yeah, and that's they say that's the toughest part of the country, right?
It's a very tough part of the country. It's a little bit west. It's about 100 miles west of the Kandahar area where the Canadians are serving, and it's never really been brought under control. Like the Americans right now, with their large troop surge that they've pushed into Afghanistan in the last year, the bulk of those troops have been pushed into the Helmand Province where I was.
And in terms of the weather and the sort as well, I mean, the conditions are pretty rough, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. What did you learn about patriotism?
Oh, I always had a small Canadian flag with me. It was about 10 inches by 6 inches or something, and I had that thing, every time I was out on the ground, I had that thing folded up and in my front left breast pocket of my shirt. And whenever I was not out on patrol, like when I was in a, you know, dig a hole in the desert and you're going to settle down for the night, I'd pull that out and I'd hang it up in the side of my hole. And it was just, I was just very, very proud to have that Canadian flag in my hole no matter where I went. It was great.
Yeah. And your buddies razz you about it? I mean, they're not Canadian, obviously, right?
Yeah, no. Well, there was a few other Canadians out there with me, but no, nobody razzed me about it at all. They were happy. I mean, the Canadians are allies of the British. They always have been. They always will be. Yeah. And in the conflict going on in Afghanistan right now, they know that the Canadian soldiers are fighting just as hard as we were, only 100 miles away.
Yeah, you have friends over there still, right?
Yes.
Yeah, do you keep in touch?
Absolutely. The magic of the internet keeps all that easy.
Yeah, and keeping in touch with your parents and loved ones here at home, that was easy to do, did you find?
Yes and no. Sometimes, depending on what sort of the operations we were involved with, there were times when I went at least a month without contacting anyone at home. If you're on one of the major bases like Kandahar or Camp Bastion is the big British base, and there's internet and there's phones, and keeping touch with people back home is very, very easy. But when we were out on the ground, like in mobile operations groups moving around, it wasn't quite that easy. Sometimes we would have access to satellite phones, sometimes not.
What has this book experience been like for you?
Well, it's been thrilling so far. I mean, it's all new to me. This is the first book I've ever written. And it's just been one happy surprise after another, right from being picked up by my literary agent to finally landing a publishing deal and now being able to chat with people like you. It's just been one great surprise after another.
Did you always write growing up?
No. Yeah. No, not really. I was always not a bad writer in school, I suppose. Right. I always got good grades and that sort of stuff. But I'd never sat down on my own and just, you know, written a story for the sake of writing a story or anything like that.
And did you find that you had to write this down, that it was some sort of catharsis for you?
No, well, I thought the story needed to be told from a Canadian soldier who was actually on the ground, you know, rather than a general writing the book, which we have a few on the shelf in Canada, or some reporters compiling stories together. I thought one needed to be there from someone that was actually on the ground at the pointy end of the spear doing the job, you know?
Yeah. And who should read this book?
I think any Canadians that are interested in what our soldiers are actually doing over in Afghanistan and what the conditions are like over there, I think that's a good read for them. And anyone that's interested in, you know, what the Green Berets are really all about, any military historians, well, this is a good book to tell you what it really takes to earn a Green Beret. They don't just hand those out willy-nilly.
Yeah. Do you think that Canadians are paying attention to this war, to this conflict?
I think they are. I don't believe it has become old news yet. I think people are still following it very, very carefully and very closely and are concerned about, you know, about where it's all going to go.
And in reading the book, I found that there are lessons in here and advice, I guess, to sound trite, for people reading the book. I mean, what's the biggest thing that you want the people to get out of this book once they read it?
The biggest thing I just want people to just have a better understanding of what the soldiers go through, you know, rather than having some reporter just tell you what they saw. This is a story from the soldier's point of view, right from the start of training through the whole experience of deployments, going on dangerous nighttime operations, to the experiences they have of actually leaving the service. It's really a whole cradle to grave of a snapshot of a soldier's career, and it's just, I think it'd be good for people to understand what the experience is really like for the individual.
Jake, thank you again for your service. Good luck with this book. I'm looking forward to finishing it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome. The book is called Wearing the Green Beret, A Canadian with the Royal Marine Commandos. It's published by McClelland & Stewart. Jake Olofsson, its author, on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.